A federal court strikes down New York's Passengers' Bill of Rights. Indonesia blames pilot error for the crash of an Atamair 737. And Endeavor heads for home. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, March 26, 2008. In a move with broader implications for similar legislation elsewhere, on Tuesday, a federal appeals court threw out New York's Airline Passengers' Bill of Rights. The Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the law, which was enacted January 1st, conflicts with federal law governing prices, routes, and services provided by an airline. The appeals panel acknowledged the law was enacted with good intentions and lamented the need for a law like that, but decided states don't have the authority to supersede federal oversight of the airlines. New York Assemblyman Michael Gennaris, lead sponsor of the bill, says the fight is far from over. The Air Transport Association, which is the lead lobbying group for the nation's airlines, said the ruling bolsters its argument that only the federal government has the right to oversee the airlines. ATA says it would prefer airlines be allowed to enact such measures voluntarily, which, of course, they could have done long ago, were it their intent. Indonesian aviation safety regulators ruled on Tuesday pilot error was at least partially to blame for the New Year's 2007 crash of an Atamair Boeing 737 that claimed 102 lives. The country's National Transportation Safety Committee wrote in its report, quote, "This accident resulted from a combination of factors, including the failure of the pilots to adequately monitor the flight instruments, particularly during the final 2 minutes of the flight. Preoccupation with a malfunction of the inertial reference system diverted both pilots' attention from the flight instruments and allowed the increasing descent and bank angle to go unnoticed," unquote. The AFP News Service reports the committee did not, however, pin all the blame on the pilots. It noted that maintenance records showed nearly 150 recurring problems with the accident aircraft's gyroscopic systems in the months leading up to the accident. As ANN reported, Flight 574 crashed into the ocean near South Sulawesi on January 1, 2007. Both pilots, 96 passengers, and 4 crew members were lost. It took 9 days before pieces of the wreckage were found. The aircraft's flight data recorders weren't found until August. Atamair has become a poster child for Indonesia's horrendous airline industry safety record. Last week, the chief of air transport safety in Indonesia grounded the airline for at least 3 months. Mission accomplished, and now they're coming home. The crew members of STS-123 left their compatriots on board the International Space Station behind Monday night, undocking from the station and beginning the journey back to Earth. A record-setting 12-day stay at the station came to its official end when shuttle pilot Gregory Johnson backed the shuttle away. Endeavour is scheduled to land tonight at Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Favorable weather is forecast. Pieces of debris found on beaches along the coast of the Bahamas on Tuesday confirm what many feared, that a single-engine aircraft apparently ditched in the ocean Monday afternoon with no survivors. The FAA says 2 people were on board the Mooney M20C when it took off from Freeport, bound for St. Lucie, Florida. It crashed shortly afterward at 1:45 p.m. local time. Air traffic controllers in Freeport lost radar contact with the aircraft just before it went down. It's not known whether an emergency condition was reported. The Royal Bahamian Defense Force responded to the accident scene. A person on board a nearby fishing vessel witnessed the accident, though no details have been released. The victims had not been identified by our deadline. Up next on ANN, a Qantas flight blows 4 tires in an aborted takeoff at LAX. The courts allow Aloha Airlines to keep operating through Chapter 11. And ExoJet picks a new CFO with a big-time resume. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for March 26th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. An aborted landing in an airliner is stressful for both the humans and the equipment. The Associated Press reports Qantas Flight 12 was departing Los Angeles International Airport late Monday night for Sydney, Australia, carrying 232 passengers and obviously enough fuel to cross the Pacific, when the pilot got a warning light and had to abort the takeoff. LAX spokeswoman Treva Miller says that when the pilot jammed on the brakes, four tires blew, and the jet wound up stranded on an adjacent runway. Australian media reports say passengers were given no details on the cause of what many described as a terrifying experience, but were simply asked to remain in their seats for about a half hour before all were evacuated safely. Qantas spokeswoman Agnes Huff said passengers were taken to area hotels and the flight was rescheduled to depart for Sydney at 12:45 p.m. on Tuesday. While some of the humans told reporters they weren't sure they'd ever fly again, Qantas said the Boeing 747-400 involved in the incident would have no such emotional issues. Crews plan to have the plane back in service in time for the Tuesday afternoon flight. Aloha Airlines tells ANN it has received U.S. Bankruptcy Court approval to continue operating as usual through its reorganization under Chapter 11. Aloha has been authorized to honor all existing reservations, take new bookings, and operate all its flights, air cargo business, and ground handling services for other airlines. The carrier's loyalty programs and Air Awards credit card will continue. The permission to continue operating preserves contracts which may be some of Aloha's most valuable assets. CEO David Banmiller called Aloha's emergence from Chapter 11 in 2006 a rebirth after securing employee concessions worth $75 million a year. This time, facing cut-rate competition from Mesa Airlines' new GO subsidiary on inter-island routes, pricing Aloha calls predatory and illegal, there may be no fat left to cut, and inviting a buyout may be the company's only reasonable option. We'll keep you posted. On Monday, ExoJet announced the appointment of Eilif Sirk Hansen to the position of Chief Financial Officer and President of International Operations and Expansion. ExoJet CEO Paul Tau commented, quote, Eilif is a highly respected strategic and financial executive with strong airline experience and a deep understanding of our business. We're thrilled that he's joined the ExoJet team. Eilif will be a significant asset as we continue on our path to becoming a billion-dollar company, unquote. Sirk Hansen previously served as executive vice president and chief financial officer for EOS Airlines, the first airline dedicated exclusively to premium long-haul business travel, operating between major business centers in the U.S., U.K., and the Middle East. Prior to that, he was U.S. Airways' senior VP and treasurer, with responsibility for the restructuring that resulted in the merger with America West. And before that, he led multi-billion dollar financing efforts at Northwest Airlines. U.S. military officials say an airstrike killed five terrorists and wounded several other insurgents among a group attempting to place a roadside bomb in the Basra, Iraq area on Monday. Coalition forces attacked after a group of about 10 individuals were spotted conducting suspicious activity. After verifying the individuals were bearing what appeared to be a roadside bomb, coalition forces directed an airstrike against the enemy force. There were no coalition force casualties. In a separate operation, U.S. helicopter crews report destroying 10 rocket-launching rails on March 23rd, northeast of Baghdad. Army spokesman Major Mike Katona commented, quote, while al-Qaeda in Iraq is still capable of isolated spectacular attacks, they are definitely feeling the pressure here in Diyala, as evidenced by the 70% reduction in attacks in the province since June of 2007, unquote. Still ahead, airliner development delays. They're not just for Boeing and Airbus. The Pentagon reels from another nuclear boo-boo, and a Bombardier Challenger loses a cabin door on takeoff. You're listening to Aero News.
uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, March 26, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. The first new Russian airliner of the post-Soviet era will be delivered a little later than planned, according to a top official with the program. In addition to serving the growing Russian regional market, the Sukhoi Superjet 100 is intended to be the first Russian aircraft able to compete with Western offerings from Embraer and Bombardier. The first Superjets were to be delivered to Aeroflot at the end of this year. However, Alexei Fyodorov, director of United Aircraft Corp., told the Associated Press the first flight of the upcoming Superjet 100 has been delayed, sending a ripple effect through the rest of the program. United Aircraft Building Corporation was incorporated in 2006, tasked with producing the upcoming 95-seat airliner. The Superjet will be the first new commercial aircraft produced in Russia since the 1991 collapse of the Soviet Union. United Aircraft reports 73 firm orders for the plane so far. Here's a story sure to provoke an interesting conversation in the VIP seats at the Summer Olympics. In the second nuclear embarrassment in a year for America's weapons managers, what was supposed to have been a shipment of helicopter batteries to Taiwan instead turned out to be four electrical fuses for Minuteman nuclear missile warheads. To make matters worse, it took until last week for the error to be discovered, a year and a half after the erroneous shipment. Pentagon officials disclosed the mistake on Tuesday. According to the New York Times, officials said the nose cone fuses were similar in function to those used for non-nuclear weapons, but were designed specifically to send an electrical signal to the trigger of the MK-12 nuclear warhead as it was approaching the ground. U.S. arms sales to Taiwan are already a sore point between the U.S. and China. The failure to track and account for nuclear warhead fuses sent to the island are sure to further inflame that debate. It may also prove inconvenient in future U.S. diplomatic attempts to slow nuclear proliferation. The fuses, by the way, have reportedly been returned to the U.S. military. In other embarrassing news, 2 days after a U.S. Airways Boeing 757 lost a wing inspection panel over Maryland, a Bombardier Challenger made a quick return to Colorado's Grand Junction Regional Airport when the cabin door apparently fell off the aircraft shortly after takeoff Monday afternoon. According to the FAA preliminary report, the aircraft entered downwind for runway 29 at the airport, squawking 7700. Tower controllers were apparently caught a bit off guard at first, but things became clearer when, as the FAA dryly notes, quote, "As the plane rolled past, the tower noticed the main cabin door was missing," unquote. KREX-TV News reports the plane landed safely and no one on board was injured. The aircraft is registered to WFP Investments, LLC. Investigators would really like to find the door, which fell somewhere in the vicinity of the airport. And finally, as new aviation markets experience explosive growth, they're also experiencing some growing pains. A pilot, as well as his flight dispatcher, are in hot water after apparently missing the memo about the Saturday opening of a new airport in India. According to the AFP News Service, the flight from Amsterdam passed right by the Rajiv Gandhi International Airport in Shamshabad, which became operational after midnight on Saturday. The KLM pilot initially flew toward the city's old airport, only to be told by air traffic control the facility was shut down. Oddly, he then steered a course toward New Delhi, where the flight was denied permission to land. So, the pilot flew to Mumbai, where he finally landed with 243 justifiably confused passengers. Meanwhile, people with tickets for the outbound flight from Gandhi International were kept waiting. Their aircraft had landed 400 miles away. The Times of India, citing an unnamed source, reported the pilot was reluctant to land in Shamshabad since the airline had not received notice the old airport closed down. Now, if you're a pilot in the U.S., you may be laughing about now. An airport closing down in the middle of the night without adequate warning? Why, that could never happen in this country. Unless, of course, you fly near the fiefdom of Chicagistan. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I'm back with Bob Poole of Reason.org, and we'll discuss the pending privatization of Chicago Midway Airport and how the U.S. stacks up against privatized air traffic control systems worldwide. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.